Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
That's right, we are. This is the Next Fan Up podcast, the podcast by the fans, for the fans. And I am your Sunday host and Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick. I'm joined by three other superfans here. We're going to be breaking down all of the rather eventful games of Week 3 of the preseason. Not only was there a lot of action on the field, but action off the field and in the, you know, on the training bench, all sorts of things that actually are having a lot of impact in the league this year. I can't remember actually a time when there was as many things that happened in a single week of preseason that really changed trajectories and even, you know, individual teams and possibly even entire divisions. So this is going to be an interesting one. But first, I got to introduce my fellow superfans here. We are joined by Charlie, our 49ers superfan. How's it going, Charlie?
Good. I abstain from this greeting, so I'm going to go ahead and sit down next to the water bottle.
All right. I understand that you are protesting the opening of the show.
Yeah, it doesn't keep me in
the
box.
We oppress nobody. Everyone is welcome.
Yeah, we oppress no listeners. At least we try not to. Those other voices you're hearing is, first up, we have Tim, our famous and well and fully missed Falcons fan, because we haven't had you on in quite a while.
I mean, I've been on fairly recently. Like, I was on a couple months ago. I'm just not making it every week. I mean, I understand that you guys want me all the time, but I'm in high demand these days.
The league needs to know more about the Falcons, clearly.
Does it? I feel like the league needs to know less about the Falcons.
All right, well, fair enough. And we're also very happy to be joined by our Green Bay superfan, Brian. How's it going up there, Brian?
Doing real good. Good to be a part of the podcast tonight, fellas.
Yeah. And at least, you know, I think everybody here has at least some good things that they saw from their teams this weekend. But but before we get into the games, I just want to, you know, if you're relatively new to this podcast, there's a lot of ways you can be listening to us. If you want to listen to us streaming, you can find all of our shows past archived on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. But really the best way is, I mean, if you can subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever podcasting service you use, write a review and rate us on iTunes, though, because that really helps other people find the show. And yeah, we're going to be coming at you with even more content coming up later this week, so, you know, definitely keep an eye out for that. But before we get too sidetracked, let's talk about what really matters, which is how great the Atlanta Falcons looked in their preseason game this week against the Miami Dolphins. I'm sure that, Tim, you have nothing but just excitement and beaming opinions about your team.
Yeah, man, Julio is good, right? I mean, two targets for Julio. He caught one for 17 yards, and he drew a pass interference penalty on the other for about 40-something yards. And that was about the highlight of it for the Falcons. And it was bad. It was so bad. My boy Desmond Trufant finally looked better than he did last week after Terrell Pryor took him to school, which that's a sentence that nobody even thought you'd say about Terrell Pryor's, like, little brother. Like, he didn't think that they'd take him to school. Like, it just makes no sense. I honestly don't know what to talk about that's positive for the Falcons. Matt Schaub was 10 for 11. Like, oh, man. Yeah, I mean, did anybody else watch this game and feel anything positive about the Falcons at all?
Well, I mean, you guys did move the ball for a while, but, I mean, that goal line interception by Matt Ryan was really bad. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like for the dress rehearsal of the season, I'm sure you were hoping to see something a little bit better.
Yeah, I turned the game off at halftime, and I just went to bed. Like, my girlfriend was over, and there wasn't even any, like, we didn't even mess around or anything. It was just like, good night. We just went straight to bed. Like, preseason football, like, kept me from getting laid. Like, that's how bad this team is.
Wow. It's truly, truly harming lives on and off the field. Well, yeah. How did Miami look? I mean, obviously, I mean, if you're feeling like you guys were not playing well, I mean, yeah. grain of salt there. But it was an interesting outing just to see Arian Foster out there on the field again. And Ryan Tannehill had sort of an interesting night as well. What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, I was interacting with Ron, our Dolphins super fan on Twitter, and he was just glowing about the Dolphins. And realistically, like, there's nothing positive to say about the Dolphins either. Yeah, Tannehill was 20 of 29, but, like, his average was 5.3 yards per pass. That's not good. He had one interception. Yes, it was deflection that Trufant picked off. And he's like, oh, that was a fluky interception. But Trufant dropped another interception that hit him right in the chest. Like, there was no pressure on Tannehill at all. I mean, as a team, Miami threw the ball 40 times, and they weren't sacked at all. I don't even know if a quarterback got hit. So everybody who's riding high on the Dolphins during this game, and they were even like, oh, Arian Foster is doing great. Get 5 carries for 10 yards and a touchdown. That's 7 fantasy points. If my running back gets me 7 fantasy points, I'm ticked. Like, they're not good either. Like, this was a bad game played by 2 bad teams. You know, Kenny Stills looked all right, but, I mean, he's Kenny Stills. Like, how good is he actually going to be? And he was picking apart people like, what's the kid's name? Brian Poole? Has anybody here heard of Brian Poole other than me? No! So get out of here. Like, and it was bad all the way around. Like, the Dolphins were bad. And the Falcons were bad, and football is bad, and man, when does Atlanta get their soccer team? I'm ready for that.
But at least the Braves are really good.
Shut up. The Braves aren't all even right. In Atlanta anymore. They left us like the Rams left St. Louis. Leaving Atlanta for the suburbs is the same as leaving St. Louis for Los Angeles.
Same distance.
Same demographics.
Well, another team where I'm sure fans were, you know, throwing their drinks and not getting laid was, although actually, I don't know, I really want to hear from our Cowboys superfan, Brian, about how he feels going into the season. But the biggest news out of the Cowboys-Seahawks game had nothing to do with the score or really individual performance. It was the fact that Tony Romo once again is injured. He was taken down, pulled down from behind, apparently broke at least one bone in his back. I've seen that he is slated now to be out 6 to 10 weeks, which, you know, could very well be half a season at this point, and or more. And so it just seems like it's the same show on repeat when it comes to the Cowboys. And unfortunately, Tony Romo just has, you know, glass bones at this point. And so it's really going to put the Dak Prescott hype train to the test. He still had a pretty good game. Russell Wilson, you know, outplayed him, as you would expect. But I'm interested, Charlie, you took a longer look at this game. What did you see from both the two teams?
Yeah, so I thought it was actually, you know, really a good thing for Dallas to see Tony go down. You know, in the end, it's going to be good. Dak Prescott's going to have a chance to, you know, sink or swim on these first, 6 weeks or so. I believe Tony Romo came out yesterday, is out 4 to 6 weeks. So... it's going to give a chance for, you know, Dak to come out and try to, you know, either sink or swim, like I said, and then out will hopefully Tony come on the white horse to save the Cowboys season. But really, I mean, the story of this game is that rookie running back, Zeke Elliott going against Cam Chancellor 3-4 times in a row, was just one-on-one matchup with Cam. First hit was basically a where he took on Cam Chancellor, trucked him out of the way, and kept on going for some yards. Very next play was a pass to someone else, and Cam and Zeke were locked up again on a man-on-man coverage, and this time Cam had the best of him, pushed him down at the end of the play. Very next play after that, Zeke gets the ball again and runs over Cam Chancellor. So was definitely a really cool matchup to watch. That's a really good running back that Dallas has, and that's really what's going to happen, is they're just going to give the ball to Zeke over and over again while Tony Romo's gone. Like you said, Seattle's offense looked good. Second drive was phenomenal. Ended up getting the touchdown there. Christine Michael might be the better back there in Seattle to take over from Marshawn Lynch. I think he's going to be the primary, and Tyler Lockett looked good. That's another thing that scares me in that offense. They got a great punt returner and a bunch of really good wide receivers that – very, very scary. So hopefully they're not going to be as good as I think they are, but I think the Seahawks are going to be taking the class of this conference once again.
I got to watch a little bit of that game too, and I thought it's a good. Somebody should have told Cam Chancellor and Ezekiel Elliott that it's the preseason. This doesn't matter because, man, those guys were going at it. If that game would have played four full quarters, it would have been a bloodbath.
Always good to see new rivalries and hate fests starting up in the league.
Oh yeah.
So moving on to the next game, where it was the Patriots versus the Panthers, the Patriots seemed to definitely look like they were the sharper team in this, and particularly their secondary looks like it's going to be really good this year, although maybe it was just a weird day for the Panthers. But Brian, you were watching this game. What did you see?
Well, the first thing that jumps out when you watch the Patriots-Panthers game was just how good that defense looked. They did back in the early 2000s, kind of a good mix of older veterans with younger talented players, and really shut down what was a very potent offense last year from Carolina. Offensively, they, you know, a little bit more scattershot, but yeah, the real story I thought was just how good the Patriots defense looked, coupled with just kind of how poor of a start we've seen from Carolina. And I'll be the first to admit that I didn't really see them going to the Super Bowl last year. I still don't buy into them 100%. I kind of think that they're going to struggle this season, even in that division. Last year, everything kind of fell right for them. And, I mean, you watch this game. Newton played pretty well, put up a pretty high passer rating the first two games, but looked out of sync in this one. Lots of drop passes on offense. The defense for the Panthers looked, you know, like they should look. But the Patriots defense, I thought, outshone them in this game.
Good stuff. Well, that takes us on to the Bills at the Redskins. This is another game where I feel like, you know, both these teams sort of look like what we think they're going to look like in the regular season. I mean, Tyrod Taylor got banged up, which is an important point. I haven't seen any more details on that, but Kirk Cousins had a pretty good outing, and it looks like they might have more of a running game than they've shown the last couple weeks. But I know that's something that Neil has been concerned about, basically. You know, and you can always count on Neil to have some really colorful metaphors. I think the term he used was unable to get out of a wet paper bag. But Robert Kelly had 12 carries for 51 yards. And again, like I said, Kirk Cousins went 12-23 for 188, three touchdowns and an interception. But again, they were playing against a Buffalo team where E.J. Manuel was playing the majority of the game, and he looked kind of like what you'd expect out of E.J. Manuel. I mean, you know, they were effectively playing the second team for most of the game. But, I mean, one thing I feel like it has to be encouraging for Washington is that DeSean Jackson still looks like he's got, you know, some spring in his step. I mean, he's a guy who you always sort of wonder about those speed receivers once they start getting up in age. You know, once their speed drops off, if they have anything else. But man, DeSean is still a legit target. And Jordan Reed, he continued to, you know, to make some nice catches. I think I was most impressed by Cousins's just ball placement, and I don't know, he's starting to turn me around a little bit. I guess I'm not saying I'm getting off the fence, but I'm sort of leaning in the positive direction on the fence when it comes to him. And again, on the Buffalo side, it was pretty much a backup fest, but we did see Reggie Bush out there. It'll be interesting to see if they can figure out ways to use them. I feel like if they couldn't figure out C.J. Spiller, I can't see them using Reggie Bush particularly well. I mean, outside of being a returner, he had just three carries for 17 yards. So that'll be something interesting to watch moving forward as well. All right, and then next up was the Steelers and the Saints. I know Greg, our Steelers super fan, is pretty happy about the way that they showed out there. I mean, Roethlisberger looked good, fresh, in regular season form. And yeah, they definitely looked like the better team on the field there, it seems like. But Tim, you were looking at this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head here. The Steelers needed to turn something around after starting the preseason 0-2. And I know it's preseason, but you still don't want to see losses in these games. And, you know, Ben came out firing. So, you know, really good passer rating, had two touchdowns. And, you know, they had a really good showing from the offense. And, you know, seeing Antonio Brown still being Antonio Brown, and, you know, you're wondering who's going to step up. And Sammy Coates stepped up. He played a heck of a game. I mean, he had a 58-yard catch and had a touchdown as well. So, you know, on the whole, I mean, the Steelers look good, and I always love seeing the Saints drop another game. You know, for the Saints, Drew Brees was Drew Brees, you know, efficient and did a good job. But, you know, I mean, they weren't able to get anything going on the ground. You know, Mark Ingram had 7 carries but only had 17 yards, and, you know, that's not giving them a whole lot of confidence going into the season. So, you know, on the whole, I mean, Pittsburgh is the better team over New Orleans, and this is, a result that you expect. But, you know, if you're a New Orleans fan, I'm not saying start burning the city down yet, but you might want to consider it pretty soon.
Maybe stock up on some flammable chemicals or something like that, if need be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the usual dumpster fire is the Browns, and they played the Buccaneers. And, you know, while the Browns, again, like we've been talking about it these last couple of weeks, and this sort of Griffin, although generally inconsistent, he's good for a few really, really fun big plays here and there. But I do think the story of this game is still just, I feel like if you're a Buccaneers fan, you got to be pretty excited about your young team and how it's going to be playing. But Charlie, you were watching this game. What else did you see?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. RG3 was electric and throwing the ball down the field to Josh Gordon. I believe he had a couple touchdowns there. And the RG3, a prior connection, Terrell Pryor, the converted quarterback, has been absolutely awesome for him, too. Now, it's tough to say once teams start game planning versus that with a guy like Terrell Pryor, who basically is a go route type of wide receiver. Once teams start game planning around that, are they going to be able to take that out? Josh Gordon is an incredible talent, you know, so I think he's going to kind of get his as the season goes along. Well, after week 4, that is, because he's suspended for a myriad of things. Yeah, I think that could end up being good. Now, the thing to look for here is every time RG3 gets hit, it looks like he's just getting hit by a train. I mean, there's limbs and everything going everywhere. Every time he gets hit, he just looks like he's getting destroyed out there. He's such a small guy. So we'll see if he can stay healthy on a full 16-game season. My fingers are not crossed there. And as for Tampa Bay, you said it. Jameis Winston looked amazing. 2 good touchdown passes. The team also had a very good punt return there for a touchdown. Overall, that Bucs team looks to be young and up and coming. And actually, I think that they might be giving Carolina all they want and more there in the NFC South.
And Roberto Aguayo made a field goal.
Yes, he did. He did make a field goal. That was impressive.
He made 3 of them.
Hey, well, there you go.
The second round pick.
But just to piggyback on the RG3 thing, like, he may look electric when he's actually throwing the ball, but he got sacked 5 times this game. Like, that's not ideal. So, I mean, I think that Browns offensive line is missing Alex Mack for sure. I mean, they gave up 8 sacks in this entire game. If RG3 gets sacked 8 times in a game, he's going to die out there.
Yeah, no doubt. I do not understand why they have let, like, you know, their offensive line used to be pretty decent, and they've just let all those pieces leave. Like, you mentioned Alex Mack and also Mitchell Schwartz, who I'm very pleased that the Chiefs picked up off and took off their hands. But that's why I kind of feel like they'll be an interesting team that's going to, they'll be on the Sports Center highlights probably every week for some sort of crazy play, but I'm not sure if they're going to win very many games. I mean, there's so many parts of that team that just have nothing. But moving on to 2 teams that hopefully have a little bit more of something, you know, since we have both of you guys here to talk about Green Bay Packers and the 49ers, I feel like, though, because a big part of the story, if you folks out there haven't heard yet, began really before the game. Before we get into the game itself, I feel like I have to toss it over to you, Charlie, to explain what happened with Colin Kaepernick and what does it mean for his future and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, first off, I mean, we really have to start at the beginning of the week or even give a little history here of the preseason. So Colin Kaepernick, you know, of course, was had all kinds of trade rumors throughout the preseason that he was going to go to Denver. Ended up not wanting to take a pay cut. The Niners didn't want to, you know, pay for some of his salary in order to fit him under the Broncos cap. So he stayed with the 49ers organization. After all of his surgeries, he came back into training camp, right at training camp on time. Quarterbacks in Chip Kelly's practice throw the ball about 8 times a game. or 80 attempts of practice. And he got very, very, his arm got very tired. So he sat out the last 2 weeks saying that he had arm stiffness, which is something that's not necessarily quantifiable on a training staff standpoint. You can't go to Cap and say, let me see your arm. Oh, yeah, you can clearly see their soreness here. No, this is the player telling you what's wrong with them. So the reason why I say that is, you know, when the start of the week, everyone said, oh, Kaepernick's going to play. Okay, excellent. The Bay Area media was all over him, talking to him about his hopes and chances for this quarterback competition. As you see in every time there's a quarterback competition, like in Denver, people are all over the place asking the quarterbacks, the coaches, the other players about that quarterback competition. So Kaepernick had ample time to talk to the Bay Area media all throughout the week. Kaepernick waits until the start of this game, during the national anthem, decides while all of his other players and teammates are standing up for the pregame national anthem and sits down on the bench the entire time to make a statement. It was all over, of course, the media after the game. You know, Kaepernick was asked about it, saying, I'm not going to stand up to show pride for a country that oppresses black people and people of color, as to why he didn't stand during the national anthem. My opinion of the entire situation is I support his message. It's a good message. I mean, we have a lot wrong in our country where, you know, there's still a lot of racism where police are able, you know, not able, but have some accidents where they've either purposefully or on accident shot people of color. And, I mean, not getting into that socioeconomics at all, but just to, you know, say that I agree with his ability to protest. I totally understand what he's doing, and I get that he needs to have that chance. So there's nothing more American than that. But doing it during the national anthem also spits on what makes this country so great. You know, the veterans, men, women of color, of other races that have all been Americans that have lost their lives. So that way, Kaepernick can make millions of dollars playing a game. And he can't stand up for those people. That's what fires me up about Colin Kaepernick. I was already pretty on the fence as to whether I even wanted him on this team. And I've been on record on this podcast during the NFC preview talking about Blaine Gabbert is going to be clearly the starter here. And he is clearly the starter. But after this stunt, I don't even want Kaepernick off the team. I mean, he's a distraction at this point, you know. When Cap decided to make this stunt, he didn't just bypass the team, the front office, and the NFL. He bypassed the veterans on that team. He didn't tell any of the veterans, the Joe Staley's, the Navarro Bowman's, hey, I'm going to do something. Are you with me or not? No, he just did it, basically spitting in the face of the Niners organization, spitting in the face of the NFL, and of the armed service members, you know, past and present of the United States, but he also spit on the veterans of the team. And so for that, I hope Kaepernick is gone. I'm done, ready for him to be cut.
Well, unfortunately, it was not a great day for 49ers quarterbacking on the field really either. I mean, Kaepernick himself did not have a good game. The team day stats for quarterbacks was 9 of 20 for 61 yards and one interception. I mean, I guess the bright side of that is that Blaine Gabbert was 2 of 3, so he was the one who completed the majority of his passes, the only one. But it was only, you know, 3 attempts ending with 14 yards. So what is this position going to look like for you guys when the regular season actually kicks off?
Correct. So, I mean, if you look at Blaine Gabbert's day, he has really gotten better and better ever since the shaky start in week one of the preseason versus the Texans. He, like you said, only had 3 passes that he was able to make, and it was largely because, you know, they had to give time for Colin Kaepernick, and every time Green Bay had the ball, they went for it on every single fourth down and got it. So they played a little keep away from the Chip Kelly offense, which I thought was probably a good idea, give their backup quarterback some time. But unfortunately, it kept the Niners from being able to show a lot on offense. That's why those throw totals and yardage totals are down. But I thought Blaine got the offense down the field very nicely. I threw a little out route that ended up counting as a rush and put Patton for a touchdown. Ball was a little bit off placement, but Patton made the adjustment for the score. Ultimately, this team is going to be all about Carlos Hyde in the running game. And once Carlos Hyde gets hurt, which I know is once, he's going to get hurt this year. He's not going to play 16 games because of the way he runs. The Niners are then going to have to face stacked boxes with subpar running back play, and they're going to end up being the bad team that everyone thinks they are. So I've said all along, the over-under is 5.5 games, and I'm still taking the under. So time to suck for Watson.
Well, I guess that means that, you know, Brian, your team is very much in a different space when it comes to the future. What did you see out of your squad on the other end?
It was interesting. Obviously, Rodgers played his first few series of the preseason, maybe his only two series of the preseason, and looked really rusty. Looked like he hadn't played for a little while. I think we went 3-and-out in the first drive. Or couldn't move the ball on the first drive very well. Ended up having a really short punt. But when we got the ball back, the offense, you could see lights coming on, and moved the ball down the field. Converted more than a couple plays on fourth down, and had a Randall Cobb plunge into the end zone for the touchdown there. So one thing I did want to highlight, we talked a little bit before the show about the tight end, Jared Cook. He looked good again. He's played in most of the preseason games so far after being out for most of the offseason with an ankle injury. And it looks like he is gelling well with the team. The quarterback likes him a lot. And I think the thing that Packer fans should be most excited about is I think it was a third down play, third and short, and he caught the ball about 5 yards in front of the line of scrimmage to get the first down, but then he turned it upfield and got another 14, 15 yards, and that's really something we haven't had for a few years now, basically since Finley went down. Last year we saw Richard Rodgers, he could kind of catch the ball and, you know, turn sideways and fall down, and that was pretty much it. So, yeah, it's great to see the offense start to click, even if it was, you know, not on the first drive. But, you know, I'm hopeful. I think the 49ers, the defense, you know, they don't get the same accolades they did back in the Super Bowl days, but it's still a good defense out there, and I was happy to see the Packers move the ball against them.
That Packer team, I have you guys winning the Super Bowl. I think you guys are going to be phenomenal, and I hope you beat out the Seahawks. The main thing, just beat the Seahawks, all right?
Man, I will tell you, there are, you know, after the Vikings, I think the Seahawks are probably the team I would most relish beating. So there would certainly be no love lost between me and our esteemed Seahawks fan.
Well, speaking of that, one more last point on that game. Before the game, Matt Maiocco, the 49ers beat writer, tweeted out what scouts were at the game. And so Seahawks had sent their GM, John Schneider, down to the game. And the Argonauts also sent a scout as well. So, of course, the top of the totem pole and the bottom. So I texted a friend. Yeah, so John Schneider is there for the Packers cuts, and the Argonauts are there for the Niners cuts. That's where Niners are right now.
Well, speaking of former 49ers quarterbacks, that does bring us to my team, the Kansas City Chiefs, and Alex Smith, who, you know, it's sort of interesting. I don't mean to rub it in, but, you know, Alex Smith continues to be sort of, I wouldn't say a polarizing figure in Kansas City, but there's definitely a segment of Chiefs fans that are just never going to be totally happy with him, I don't think. You know, ever since we made that trade with the 49ers for what ended up being two second-round picks, I mean, which is a really hefty haul for a quarterback that I think a lot of the league views as being middle of the road or possibly worse. I think he's above average. But, you know, one way or the other, he's now what our team is wrapped around. And I think in the fourth year under Andy Reid, he's really, I think he knows that offense extremely well. I mean, that was part of what was holding him back in San Francisco, I think, was was just having a different coordinator every year. He had like seven different offenses there. But so, you know, I think now he's really sort of settled down into the Chiefs offense, and he once again looked good in the preseason in this game. Although I do have to say, I mean, and I feel bad for our Chicago superfan, Tom, we were chatting throughout the game. It's sort of hard to evaluate how well the Chiefs played in this game just because the Bears were so bad. I mean, just so bad. And I mean, this clearly they have offensive line issues. They're still not clicking. They finished the first half. You know, their starters had a total of -7 passing yards, 20 yards total offense in the first half. So I mean, that led to Smith just in the first half having 30 pass attempts. The Chiefs were on the field the entire first half, and he looked good. You know, went 20 of 30 for 181. No touchdowns, was driving it down, and, you know, they tend to like to punch it in with Spencer Ware at the goal line. Whereas, you know, Jay Cutler just couldn't get it going. I mean, some of it was, you know, again, he wasn't being protected, but a lot of it was just bad passes on his part. Brian Hoyer looked worse. What's a shame for Chicago is the quarterback who by far looked like their best was Connor Shaw, who was the only one, again, who had anything. Cutler went 6 of 15. Brian Hoyer went 8 of 17. Shaw actually went 5 of 6 for 68 yards and a touchdown. Late in the game, he went down with a leg injury that looked really nasty. And he was immediately rushed to a hospital for basically an emergency surgery because he broke his leg just above the ankle, apparently. It was one of those ones where you could see it on the screen. Player just rolled over on his ankle, and yeah, it was bad. So for the Bears, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think there's certain things that the Bears match up well on. Their defense overall was able to at least stymie the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs they were being slowed down. They were getting actually a lot of pressure. Smith was sacked once, although it seemed like he got hit two or three times. I think they're going to keep the scores relatively low, but their offensive line is so bad their general skill position play is so inconsistent that I just have a hard time seeing them winning a ton of games if they're going to be playing like this. But, you know, and it's they had similar outings earlier in the preseason. Hopefully they're able to get that sorted out for them. Because Jeremy Langford, I mean, he had one nice run, but basically he hasn't gotten it together either. So this could be a long year for the Bears. On the Chiefs side, I will say that some guys that stood out that I hadn't talked about, Andrew actually brought it up last week, was our first pick. We was actually the top of the second round, and Chris Jones, defensive tackle, he got a lot of time with the starters this game, and he looks really good. I mean, part of the reason why I hadn't talked about him much because I mean he like if you just watch him on the field, you'll be immediately impressed because he's a big, tall, extremely strong man who will just throw blockers out of his way. But he had this like weird technique of just looking like a giant and like throwing dudes out of his way, but in a way that didn't actually get him upfield and into the quarterback's face, and then and running backs would just run around him. But I think he's gotten better and better and better, and now he was really making some disruptions, making some plays. He batted down a pass. I mean, he was really showing that he probably deserves to be. He's definitely going to be in the starting rotation. He may actually displace one of the Chiefs' other very good defensive linemen, and I don't even know who that'd be. They put him in the place of Poe when he was on there. So the Chiefs are going to have an extremely solid rotation, which I think is how they're going to do it. But he might actually. I mean, this is a contract year for Poe, and I think. And Poe actually has had a couple of down games in the preseason. He may be. Moving in on Poe's spot there. Spencer Ware also, I mean, I don't know if it was the Bears' defense was just good at being stingy in the run game, but Spencer Ware didn't have a great game, and he's the guy we're going to be looking to be our bell cow. But at the same time, I mean, the one thing I did notice, and again, Tom and I were talking about it, is that their pickup of Jarrell Freeman, the former Colts linebacker, looks like a really good pickup. He had a good game, and so again, I think the defense is going to be improved, but there's just not enough going to be going on with their offense to get it going. And there was also the news that Eric Berry is finally back in camp. He's reported, and he's going to be probably not playing the fourth preseason game, but he's in shape and will be ready for week one, as we thought. That's enough of me just totally going off of my homerism. It's time to hear about teams that Tim doesn't like. because Tim is going to be talking to us about the Detroit Lions and the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, on the whole, this, you know, looking it over, seems like a pretty boring game from the starter perspective. You know, as far as like a dress rehearsal, you know, for Baltimore, they won big, but, you know, Flacco didn't do a whole lot. You know, most of the scoring was done by Ryan Mallett, who had a, you know, a passing touchdown and a rushing touchdown. So he actually had a pretty good game. But, I mean, we all know this is Joe Flacco's team because he is elite. So, you know, it's up to, you know, Flacco to run this. And, you know, the Lions just, you know, they look bad. Couldn't really get anything going. You know, Theo Riddick had one really long run. And then beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot going on. Golden Tate, you know, 3 catches on 5 targets. Marvin Jones, 3 catches on 6 targets. They're going to have to do better than that if they want to make something happen. And Anquan Boldin, you know, no disrespect, but I mean, he's too old to, you know, really make a change for Detroit. So, you know, I think what we're seeing from Detroit is the same thing that we've always been seeing from Detroit, and it's that they are just there. You know, I mean, the Ravens look good, but again, it's the preseason, so it'll be hard to tell. You know, Ravens defense was, you know, good as always. You know, CJ Mosley leading the, you know, the charge there. So, you know, on the whole, you know, just another standard preseason game, which is kind of disappointing. Like, you want to see, you know, Stafford get out there and sling it and do better than he did, but, you know, I mean, if he's not connecting with his receivers, then, you know, that's how it is. And, you know, Flacco only had 16 pass attempts, connected on 11. So, you know, stuff like that you're going to take if you're one of the fans from this team, and you know, see what happens.
So, but is Flacco elite though? I mean,
no.
I feel like he's dropped down in that discussion quite a bit these last couple of years. He's got a ring, but I mean, he was when I'm not sure he was ever fully healthy last year, so that's part of what makes it difficult. But I mean, the last couple of seasons of his have not been great.
No, but I mean, I can't throw a shade at Joe Flacco. He came out in the same draft as Matt Ryan, and he has a ring, and Matt Ryan does not. So, you know, I got to give Flacco the edge there. So he's better than my quarterback. Hooray! You know, but I mean, are we really expecting the Ravens or the Lions to really be anything this year? I feel like we're not. You know, neither team is going to win their division, and you know, we're not even sure if either team is going to be second in their division. You know, we're looking at third to fourth place in their divisions, and you know, this is just one of those games between two teams that exist for the sake of existing.
Well, moving on to two other teams that were, you know, down in their divisions last year, but I think, I mean, they're in divisions that both of which are very winnable, I think are pretty much toss-ups, and that was the Philadelphia Eagles and the Indianapolis Colts. I think a lot of people have been fairly skeptical about what this new regime in Philadelphia has been doing, but at least in this game, they were looking good in the first half.
Yeah, they did look really good, but I do honestly have Philly finishing in the top five of the draft, you know, getting a top five pick. I just don't think that they're going to be able to, you know, wipe the disgust of Chip Kelly or the lack of emotional intelligence of Chip Kelly out of the building in time, as their owner said when they fired Chip Kelly. But, yeah, I mean, Bradford had one pick. It really wasn't his fault. Bounced off his wide receiver, got picked off by the DB. Did throw two touchdown passes as well, including one to Doriel Green-Beckham, who came over from Tennessee in a trade about a week ago. Little 4-yard touchdown, using them as the red zone target he always should have been used as. So overall, yeah, Bradford looked good. As for the Colts, Andrew Luck looked pretty good as well. Philip Dorsett caught a few balls, but really it was Dante Moncrief who was all over the field catching a few touchdowns from Scott Tolzien, as well as a couple of long hits from Andrew Luck. So all in all, yeah, you're right. Both these teams have wide open divisions. Although I see I see Dallas winning the NFC East even without Romo.
Well, and that then brings us to the Battle of New York. It doesn't really matter who was hosting this game because it was the Jets versus the Giants, and it looked like a game of fairly well. At least I'm not sure whether it's underwhelming offenses or just defenses on both sides are outplaying, you know, one another's offenses. But Brian, you were watching this game, right?
I thought you summed it up pretty well, actually. Neither offense has really shined through. I thought it was primarily a defensive battle. On the New York Jets side, Fitzgerald looks like a guy who sat out for most of the preseason, just really rusty. wasn't able to string together any sort of semblance of a drive. The defense, though, for the Jets was all over the Giants. The Giants' O-line looked pretty bad. Couldn't get the running game going, and Eli was running for his life. The one thing that I thought that was noteworthy for the Jets was that Matt Forte had his first appearance and did what he does. He ran the ball pretty decently and caught the ball well. I think he's going to add a nice little dimension to their offense, and especially if Fitzgerald does struggle, he's got a nice little outlet that he can throw to in Forte. On the Giants side, I already mentioned the bad O-line. Eli looked like he was throwing off his back foot, throwing from all sorts of different angles that they don't coach you to throw from. Threw a pick to Darrell Revis that it looked like Odell Beckham kind of let happen, probably smartly. It's the preseason. He was going to get clobbered by one of the Jets safeties if he tried to make a play on it, but that led to one of the interceptions, and honestly, it was kind of a lackluster defensive-driven game.
Good stuff. Well, moving on to a game where there was a bit more fireworks, at least in the first half among the starters, was the Titans and the Raiders. And I watched this game because, you know, I'm always looking for signs of weakness in my division rivals. And the Raiders have had a really bad preseason up until this game. Their first couple preseason games, they looked really flat. It seemed like there was something wrong with the connection between Derek Carr and Amari Cooper. But that was all gone when this game started. Granted, it was against the Titans, but in terms of just individual player takeaways, it does look like, you know, like Carr was back on track. He went 12 of 18 for 169 and two touchdowns. And he had a couple of, actually, both touchdowns were really nice. I mean, granted, I think he was fitting into such tight windows that, you know, if those cornerbacks had gotten their head around and actually seen the ball, I mean, they would have been straight up dangerous throws. But nonetheless, I mean, they put on a bit of clinic. Still, they went into the half down 20 to 14 to the Titans, who, despite the fact that their defense, I think, has been, fairly open throughout most of this preseason, their offense continues to show that it's going to have some potency this year, I think. Marcus Mariota went 9 of 16 for 170 yards. He had some, again, some nice throws to Tajae Sharpe. Or actually, it was just one big one this year, this particular week. But Andre Johnson got in on it. Rashard Matthews had a good catch. I do think, though, that the one of the biggest takeaways was, again, that this the ground game of theirs looks like it's going to be good. I mean, this is the way that they apparently built this team, is they put a lot of assets in their offensive line and in bringing in running backs. And the duo of Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray, who are both guys that I think a lot of the league and a lot of commentators were down on, both DeMarco Murray thinking that, you know, his one good season was a fluke behind the best offensive line in the league, down in Dallas, and Derrick Henry just seemed like his attributes, he wasn't a good fit for the NFL at that position, being just sort of a slower, harder hitting back who would just be outrun by the NFL speed. But he looked good, and he looks like the sort of guy he's going to be put in a position where he's going to be able to shine this year. Both Murray and Henry had touchdowns in this game. And so there's signs of optimism on both sides. I'm always happy to see, though, the Raiders going into, basically the Raiders losing the starter portion of their games, though. All right, and that brings us to another AFC West divisional game. This time, Tim got the look, but I was checking in on this as well because I enjoy watching the bad quarterback play of the Denver Broncos this year. I do think it'll be interesting to see, you know, this is one we're going to get a longer look at via Hard Knocks as well, so that's going to be fun. But Tim, what did you see out of these two teams in terms of Los Angeles and Denver?
Good Lord, both of these teams have terrible quarterbacks. Jared Goff is garbage. Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch are garbage. It would be a tough year to be a Broncos fan. Like, win the Super Bowl, and then the next year, they're not going to make the playoffs. It's not happening. CJ Anderson and Ronnie Hillman can't run them into the playoffs in that division. It's just not going to happen. And, I mean, good Lord, the Rams without Todd Gurley, like, if Gurley's not playing, why'd the rest of the team even show up? like, I'd just be like, nah, I'm good. Like, he's not playing now. That, you know, I'll sit this one out too. And, man, it's just, I mean, anybody want to chime in with a little bit more than that? But, I mean, I feel like that's pretty much saying what happened.
Yeah, that is pretty much it. I mean, I was a bit worried. I mean, and sort of what I was talking about with the Chiefs was, you know, in terms of there were some positive defensive signs. It was because I was genuinely worried after the Chiefs played the Rams last week, and the Rams looked like, you know, like a competent functioning offense against the Chiefs, which, you know, any good defense shouldn't allow that to happen. But it does appear that they've fallen a bit back to earth now. That brings us to another AFC West game, which was the Chargers versus the Vikings. And this is one that, Charlie, you took a look at. I mean, I'm hoping you're going to say that the Chargers look horrible, but without Phillip Rivers, I guess that's sort of what one expects. I think most of the highlights they've been playing of this game have been just ignoring that the Chargers are even on the field, because everyone seems pretty impressed by Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people are very impressed with Bridgewater. I personally think he's going to look very good in the preseason because people aren't game planning for the underneath passes. A lot of friends and I actually call him Black Alex Smith, in reference to Alex Smith, which, you know, don't get me wrong, Alex Smith is a great quarterback, and I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to be one too, but he just doesn't really push the ball down the field in this current time, and relies on a running game and a great defense, which is exactly what Alex Smith does. But, I mean, overall, Teddy has looked good. You know, had just this crazy shake on a San Diego defender on, like, a 20-yard run that he had. Just totally left the guy's jock strap on the middle of the field. So definitely excited that to see, you know, Minnesota play well. Always been kind of a little bit of a fan of those guys, hoping that you know, they can do well and make it into the playoffs. And also, I was really surprised that Jerick McKinnon is as fast as he is. Back up for AP, because AP did not suit up this game. Had about a 20-yard run, looked like he was untouched. But speaking of fast running backs, Melvin Gordon, the Chargers, had about a 40 or 50-yard run as well, where he was just untouched and no one could catch up with him. But it was all basically straight line speed. Melvin Gordon, of course, coming back from the microfracture surgery during the offseason. We'll see if he's able to, you know, make an impact on the field this season when he's forced to go side to side. I know from experience, Navarro Bowman looked really good in the straight line, but when he was going side to side, it was a whole different cup of tea. So we'll see. Stephon Diggs, the wide receiver for the Vikings, looked really good as well. He's probably going to be a good guy to look at if you're doing a PPR league for your fantasy team. And I actually would like to see the Vikings without Adrian Peterson. So if you've ever watched the Vikings, whenever Adrian Peterson's on the field, they have him in a single back formation. And traditionally, when they're in that formation and AP's on the field, they're giving it to him. But then when they do a shotgun formation, that's what Teddy Bridgewater is more familiar with. So when you see them in shotgun, they're going to pass. You know, for the most part, that's pretty much what that offense is about. I would like to see them do some more carries or some more playing time with Jerick McKinnon. That way, that tell is no longer applicable. But I still think that Green Bay is the class of that division. But Minnesota's a fun team to watch.
Yeah, I think it'll be tough to. It's going to come right down to the end. Both teams are really strong, the Packers and the Vikings. They're set up a little bit differently. Packers are a little bit more offensively driven. The Vikings are a little bit more defensively driven. But I think that'll make it a really fun matchup to watch throughout the year. And I'll just echo what you said about McKinnon. I personally also like watching the Vikings when Adrian Peterson isn't in, because he's just such a dominant player that I don't want to see them with him. But McKinnon is nothing to sneeze at either. I think he was one of the top Spark athletes, just kind of like the Nike measurements, height, weight, speed, just a total freak of an athlete. It doesn't surprise me that he looked fast to you, because he is very fast.
Yep. And I have KC winning that division there with San Diego finishing in the cellar.
Glad to hear it. Well, that takes us on to the Arizona Cardinals and the Houston Texans. We have been getting some feedback from our super fans on this game, and that Dr. Jones, our Cardinal superfan is pretty concerned with with a few things, primarily the outside, the number two cornerback spot, but I think probably what a lot of people notice and what you would think has to be most concerning is the continued poor play of Carson Palmer, given that this team is just not the same without their quarterback. Whereas there are some positive signs in terms of the Texans getting it together on offense, maybe getting some added potency to match the strength of that defense. But Brian, you were watching this game. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that jumps out is just how poor Carson Palmer looked. He threw an interception for a touchdown last week, threw another really bad one this week. The other thing that I noticed with the Cardinals, too, was their defensive backs got a little bit exposed. Patrick Peterson was kind of a late pull from the game. He ended up pulling something and before the game started, so he didn't play, which really exposed that defensive secondary. I think Justin Bethel got worked by Will Fuller on one touchdown, and just looked bad in general for the most part of his playing time. I thought the Texans, though, I don't know if it's a function of just being in the preseason, but Osweiler looked really good. He, I think, was 11 for 13 with one touchdown, and one of those incompletions should have been another touchdown that the wide receiver ended up dropping. They rolled to 31 points in the first half. The defense looked a little bit off their game today, gave up lots of yardage in the first half while the starters were still in, but they forced some timely turnovers, and in the end it didn't really matter. So it was actually a really fun game to watch, as far as preseason goes.
Good stuff. Well, that brings us now to our final game, which is actually still going on. We are recording this Sunday night, and the Bengals and the Jaguars are still playing. But, you know, it's already the end of the third quarter, practically, or at least it's about halfway through the third. And so the starters have been pulled. And I think the big takeaway from this game, in terms of the starters, was that after a couple of games of really stellar offensive performances from the Jaguars, that they came out really flat in the first half. I mean, the offense had just 12 yards and did have a turnover in the first half. Meanwhile, the Bengals looked like they were taking a business trip. Dalton threw just 10 passes, but completed 6 of them for 77 yards and a touchdown. They were primarily running the rock on the ground with Hill and Bernard. But either way, they generally look good. And again, A.J. McCarron, the backup for Dalton, he's already had a good game at this point with 100 yards and a touchdown. But, so for the Jaguars, they haven't had, a game where they've looked this stunted when it comes to their offense so far this preseason. But the one bright spot was T.J. Yeldon. He had 5 carries for 34 yards. I actually think that their sort of two-punch running attack of Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon is going to be good this season. But I also think there's just no mistaking which of these two teams is the one that's more ready for a playoff push and that is probably going to get there, and that is the Bengals. They've played an all-around solid game so far tonight. The other guys that I think everyone's normally trying to keep their eye on, guys like Tyler Boyd, haven't gotten much action at this point in the game, but I'm sure we'll be hearing from our English Simon super fan at some point, and he'll be pretty happy with how this has gone thus far. So we've reached the end of our TV slate. I do appreciate all of you listeners sticking in to get the fan takes on every single one of these games. If you want to hear more from us, our archives, you can find it in actually several different places. I mentioned at the top of the show, on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup, on iTunes, and we're getting slowly but surely, we're getting onto all of those various different podcast streaming sites and services. You can also find all of our fan-written recaps and previews of all of these games, which we were referencing in some cases, on our Facebook page by just searching Next Fan Up in Facebook. And we also we post a lot of content and keep the conversation going on Twitter. We are at NFU Podcast. And I myself personally, you'll see me tweeting at Clayton Nicholas. So if you have any thoughts on the show, if you want to bash Alex Smith, that seems to be about half of the football conversations I have on Twitter. Go ahead and hit me up at Clayton Nicholas. And you, Charlie, if someone wants to get going more with this 49ers discussion and your reality show of a quarterback position, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
To watch as the hourglass turns, you can find me on Twitter at the Charlie Smith. That's Charly.
And Brian, if people want to watch a quarterback situation that is, you know, fairly dull by comparison, not quite Days of Our Lives, where can they get in touch with you?
They can find me at Brian's Per Second, B-R-I-A-N-S.
And Tim, if someone for some unknown reason wanted to take a shot at Desmond Trufant and wanted to get punished for it, what would be the best way for them to do that?
The best way for them to do that would be to reconsider their life, because Desmond Trufant's amazing and doesn't deserve your grief. But if you want to find me on Twitter, you can do that at TimIsHiding.
Nice. All right. Well, this has been a good show. We always end with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.